With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. And we have basketball insider Mike Grenier with us now. And Mike, welcome back. How are you?
This is good. It's you could tell it's basketball season because it's freezing out.
Oh, my goodness. My hands are so cold in my office. It's crazy. You know what this is, though, Mike? This is a tease because I love winter weather, as you know. I love skiing. Yep. And I'm thinking, okay, we got a chance at some dusting of white Christmas. This could be it. But it's going to be – this happens every year. A couple of cold days before Christmas, then it warms up 40s, 50s, and 60s. So, you know.
Right. It could be. Well, for your sake, I hope it snows in the North Country.
There you go.
So you can get to the skiing part of it.
I'm all over that. That'd be cool. All right, Mike.
In the meantime, the Celtics have already been knocked off in the in-season tournament. So, they move on. But I don't know how valuable the in-season tournament is for a team like the Celtics, which has designs on a much greater goal.
Well, you know, that's what I wanted to start off with. I got a couple of burning questions, but that's one of them. To me, it's totally foreign, I guess is the right word.
Yes.
It makes no sense. The courts look hideous.
Yes.
You know, and I think the word last night was they played uninspired basketball. They didn't seem to be, focused in terms of tournament time, certainly. And I don't know. What's his name? Halliburton played out of his mind, of course.
Right.
But I'm not. It didn't bother me at all that they lost this game because I was reading in the Globe beforehand. It would have been 3 games in 5 nights or something like that.
Right. And you know, the Celtics have, like I said, they have higher goals in mind. And I'll tell you what, though, the thing that kind of like makes me a little nervous if you're looking down the road in the playoffs is the Indiana Pacers are a team that, okay, they're probably more fervent about trying to win the in-season tournament because they might feel deep down that they might not have a shot at winning the whole thing in May and June. However, that's a scary team to play in the opening rounds of the regular playoffs. I'm not talking the in-season tournament. I'm talking next April and May. That's a team I'd be a little scared of because they are so offensive-minded, and we saw it last night against the Celtics. They had a huge fourth quarter to take the game away from Boston. But they've already had a couple of 150-point games. And if you look at their lineup and their approach to the game, it's totally offensive-minded, which is kind of surprising because Rick Carlisle, the former Celtic, when he was with Dallas, he was a stickler for defense. But maybe it's because of the design of the talent that's on that roster right now. They're a much more offensive-minded team than he ever had before. And you don't want to be playing them, and I don't think in the first round of the playoffs, because in a short series, let's say 3 out of 5, they get hot for a couple of games and score 140 or 135 or whatever, you're in danger of getting knocked out of the playoffs early. And when you look at it right now, Rick, the Pacers are averaging 128 points per game, okay, through the first 20, 21 games of the season. No other NBA team is even close to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's a good point. We'll have to keep our eye on it. But as you well know, it's a long season.
Yep.
Anything can happen. But you're right. That's a team to watch out for. And, again, I don't think the Celtics, you know, were – I don't know. I don't know if they were focused or not. But it does bring me to a question about the status of Porzingis with respect to In-N-Out. Aside from the fact I'm a little concerned, we all have been, about his injury proneness, if that's if that's proper to say.
His injury history. Right?
Yeah, okay, all right, that's better. But this one seems to be dragging on, and at first it was like, oh, he'll be out a game or two. Now it's dragging on,
yeah.
And so it's twofold. What is the effect on the team having to wait and wait and wait, not be sure if he's ever going to show up or whatever that might be, the uncertainty of it. And I suppose that's across all sports anyway.
Sure.
But
I think the immediate impact, Rick, is that it cuts down on the bench, meaning like now instead of having Horford come off the bench as an ideal sixth man, because I think he's had a great year for a 37-year-old guy. He's blocking shots. He's making three-pointers. He's playing with intensity, like the intensity of a rookie. But yet he knows, he's smart enough to know that he has to conserve his energy, conserve his body for a long season. So the immediate impact is the fact that Horford has to start, okay? And that weakens the bench because You bring in Sam Hauser, who, by the way, is averaging 10 points a game and is shooting by far a team best, like 46% on three-pointers. And as we know, that's his bread and butter. So he takes a lot of threes. It's not like he's driving to the basket like Jason Tatum. But Sam Hauser has been excellent off the bench. Peyton Pritchard less so because he's been inconsistent with his shot. But once you get beyond those two, with Porzingis injured, you're really hurting because Banton doesn't give you anything special. Luke Kornet has been pretty good in a few games, but physically he's limited. He's not like an athletic player. So the impact has been, in terms of the depth of the bench, is not nearly as good with Porzingis out because now you're moving Horford up to a starting position. So that being said, you're right. The uncertainty of Porzingis and his injury history, you don't know when he's going to come back. Initially, we thought it was just going to be two or three games, and it became a 2 weeks. And I think he even posted on social media a picture of his hot tub or a cold tub when he was getting treatments, and he was very up thumbs up with his statement saying, it won't be long, it won't be long. But for Porzingis, not long, maybe 2-3 weeks, whereas for other players, it may be just two or three games.
Yeah.
I think with Porzingis, because he's such an important factor on the team, the Celtics are going to be ultra cautious in bringing him back because they know they're going to need him, a 7'3" guy who can score. He's averaging almost 20 points a game, despite the fact that the Celtics have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. He's still up to like 19.7, so you really need him. So you want to have the best record in the Eastern Conference in the long run. So it's a fine line there. It's a fine line that they're working right now, the Celtics, but I think they want to bring him back when he's 100%, not even 98%.
Well, it's been a known factor, you know, even when they got him, that this is a problem. The bench depth is a concern. I still think Stevens is going to pull a rabbit out of a hat, at least I hope he does. The question I have for you about this thing, though, is, Mike, with respect to losing your big man, how do the Celtics stack up against other teams who lose their big man? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yes, I do.
Okay.
For example, last night, you know, the Indiana Pacers have Miles Turner, and he's a big man. He's a shot blocker. But you kind of don't know that he's a big man because he's like Porzingis, and he likes to play outside, and he takes three-point. Well, actually, Porzingis made an improvement in that area. He's playing more inside with the Celtics as an offensive player. Miles Turner, who is a very athletic big man, close to 7 feet, 6'10", 6'11", he blocks a lot of shots, but on offense, he blends in with Halliburton and Buddy Hield and the guys who played last night against the Celtics because he's an outside shooter. He takes a lot of three-pointers. So in that respect, the Celtics don't lose anything in the sense that, like, Miles Turner is not going to hurt him inside. But with respect to other teams, like, for example, the Knicks, Julius Randle is their big man. He goes inside. He drives. He's an aggressive driving player. But you expect Porzingis to be back by the time they play the Knicks, let's say, you know, obviously later this season.
Okay, let me interrupt
Eastern
you.
Conference, we have Giannis would be a major worry because Giannis and Brook Lopez, their twin towers that the Milwaukee Bucks have, would definitely be a huge problem if Porzingis were to miss extended time or to miss part of the playoffs, let's say, against the Milwaukee Bucks. That would, I don't know if it would doom the Celtics, but it would certainly make their
make their
effort that much tougher.
I want to ask the question in a different way because you answered a question that I probably asked, and I meant to ask it in a different way.
Sure.
Okay, because if Giannis is out, if Doncic is out, or whatever his name, Jokic, and the other, Doncic, is out, if they're out, and Porzingis is out, which team, not necessarily head-to-head, but which team has lost more? You know, in other words, do those teams depend more on their big guys than the Celtics depend on Porzingis? You know what I'm asking here?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
A comparison of losing your big man.
I would say that the Celtics, in the long run, would depend less on Porzingis than, let's say, Denver with Jokic, who is having another MVP season, by the way. He's having. He had a ridiculous game a week or so ago, Rick Reed.
Yes, yes.
35 points, 18 assists, which you don't get these days, and 16 rebounds. This is ridiculous. He is by far the central figure on that team. He's the hub of that team. Everything revolves around him, and he's also the off-the-court leader. So if they lose him, it would be a much bigger blow to Denver than the Celtics losing Porzingis. Same thing with the Bucks losing Giannis, because he's such a huge factor on both ends of the floor. He contributes a lot in terms of driving to the basket, drawing fouls. He gets opposing centers in foul trouble. So if the Bucks were to lose him for an extended period, they'd be in deeper trouble than the Celtics would be in losing Porzingis. So I know what you're getting at with that question, and that's my answer.
Okay,
I
think...
You think other teams...
Well, what I was getting at, I think, and you answered it, is that if every team took away its big guy, you know, how would the Celtics stack up against these other teams?
And that, I think they would stack up very well because of the fact that in Al Horford, you have like a 14, 15-year veteran who's still in great physical condition, who really hasn't been injured all that much in recent years. He's just been a real sturdy guy for an older guy. He really must take great care of himself in the off season, ready to go on August 1st when they start like working out religiously, I guess, because he's been like even better than advertised this season. He's showing no signs of slowing down. I thought it might be some of these guys, as you know, Rick, when they get in that 36, 37-year-old range, they drop off precipitously.
Mm-hmm.
They drop off significantly. I think of Chris Paul, for example, as a guard. He's not contributing much to his new team, the Golden State Warriors. He's kind of on and off the injury list. And you have other guys, you know, who've been getting injured more often. Paul George out with the L.A. Clippers was a terrific player. He's in and out of the lineup. Kawhi Leonard's not that old, but he's in and out of the lineup. You get to have guys who are sort of like chronically injured as they get older, whereas Al Horford's been hanging in there. So, to me, Al Horford would be the bellwether of that group of older players who could still play in May and June where you're uncertain about other guys. But I'm thinking Porzingis is going to be back. He did play 65 games last season, which is the most he's had in some time. And so if he gets back on track here soon, meaning the next week or so, I think they're going to be fine in the long run as long as he stays healthier. Still a better option than having Robert Williams, who would be gone for the season if he was still with
the Celtics. Yeah, yeah. No, I know. I know. And it's just panic mode. I want to see him in there. Now, I have to ask you if I should be concerned about the play, what your eye sees with Jrue Holiday.
Jrue Holiday, I think his shooting is a little bit off. I was looking at his stats. He's shooting like 42% and maybe like 30-something percent on threes. But he's not the primary scorer. I think he still sees his role as instrumental as the point guard, distributing the ball. And he plays sensational defense on a nightly level. I think even more consistent than Marcus Smart because he doesn't get in foul trouble as often as Marcus Smart. I think he's still doing the job as a defensive-minded point guard. And he knows he doesn't have to score as much because he has, as a wingman, he has Jason Tatum, who I think, Rick, is having his best season.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen tremendous improvement in Jason Tatum in a couple of areas. One, his rebounding. He's up to almost 9 rebounds per game. And I think if you look at him play, we see him make that extra effort on the glass. We see him make the extra effort on defense. To me, he's having his greatest year. He's shooting basically 50% from the floor and like 37% on threes, which is still very good on threes, but 50% from the floor overall, especially with some of the difficult shots he takes from outside. That's really good. I'm more concerned about Jaylen Brown and his lack of assists compared to his turnovers. He's had only, I looked it up, Rick, he's only had 61 assists in 20 games, and he's had 47 turnovers. That's really a bad assist-to-turnover ratio. I think he needs to improve in terms of involving his teammates. I saw one game just a week ago where he had 0 assists and 3 turnovers. That's just not good. He can go in the basket. He can make acrobatic shots. He can score in various ways, but he's not a good passer. We know he's not a good ball handler, but he's not making that intuitive pass to an open teammate, and that concerns me both short-term and long-term, in that it's not that he's a selfish player, he's just not a great passer.
Well, he's also missing Porzingis, and much was made of his chemistry with Porzingis.
True, and so we'll see if that picks up when Porzingis comes back, but it concerns me that he doesn't have a lot of assists per game on a nightly basis, whereas Tatum does find the open man, and then course, he's able to take over a game, much like Larry Bird did in the fourth quarter or in the third quarter or whatever. He can sense when the Celtics need some baskets, and so he'll try to take over for a 2 or 3 minute stretch. Yet his maturity level is such that he knows he can back off of that. He doesn't have to take that many extra shots, because if Porzingis is healthy, he can score inside. Drew Holiday can score. And let's talk Derek White, who's having a terrific season, averaging 14.5, and he's shooting like 47% overall and like 39% on threes. And he's I think people, because he's been a really good offensive player, we tend to overlook how effective he is on defense. He's really a ball hawk on defense. He has a knack for blocking shots from behind. I think he's having a great season while averaging almost 15 points a game. So he's another weapon in the overall scheme, both offensively and defensively, that Joe Mazzulla can rely on. I think he's having the best season of his career.
That push-up popsicle floater he has with the right hand cracks me up, because he doesn't shoot it. He just lets it go.
And it's a difficult shot, a floater. Not many players have mastered that.
Oh, it's beauty.
It's a really in-between type shot. It's not a jumper. It's not a push. Falling back away from the hoop and making a jumper. It's not a fallback jumper. It's a really tough shot, and he seems to have a really good knack for it. So I like the way he's been playing. So overall, I like the way the team has been playing, but, you know, obviously Porzingis' injury throws a monkey wrench into the whole project for a little while, and you hope that when he does come back, he's in line to play, you know, 40 or 50 or 60 games in a row, because the idea, the design, is that they're going to go deep in the playoffs, and they're going to need him for sure.
All right. Finally, Mike, any other observations about either the Celtics or the league in general?
Well, you know, let's do a power five.
I'm writing it down as we speak.
Let's do a power five.
Number five.
Because if you look at it, you know, the Celtics have still won, even though they lost last night. They have 7-3 in their last 10. But let's start with the number five team. I think I really think Oklahoma City Thunder really deserve to be in there. Actually, I'm going to say the Milwaukee Bucks are at the number five spot.
Wow. Okay.
I'm going to go with the Oklahoma City Thunder in the number four spot, because they're 8-2 in their last 10. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a tremendous player as a primary scorer. They have other scorers, and they are also a team that scores a lot of points. They're averaging, matter of fact, right behind the Indiana Pacers record, 128 points a game, the Oklahoma City Thunder, 119 per game. Mm-hmm. So they're second in the league in scoring. So they're a dangerous team, all right? So after that, you got the Orlando Magic, 9-1. They finally lost the other night after winning 9 straight, and they're just like a game behind the Celtics, you know. So you got to go with them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, how many teams have we named so far?
All right, you got three so far. You've got the Bucks at number five, OKC number four, Magic number three, and last week you had the Timberwolves at number two.
Well, you know what? I have to go with the Celtics as number two now, because they are 7-3 in their last 10. They lost last night. Whereas Minnesota has a slightly better record at 15-4. Now, that could change overnight. If they play tonight, whatever, in the in-season tournament, that changes. But for now, at least for today, Tuesday, December 5th, you have to go with the Celtics at the number two spot and Minnesota at the number one spot. And, you know, it's funny. A lot of people are surprised by Minnesota, because they do have the best record currently in the NBA. But I'm not, because of the personnel they have, and they've had for a year or so or two, which not just Anthony Edwards, who's a great scorer, right? He's been missing the last three or four games with injuries. But they have a dual big man, sort of like Brook Lopez and Giannis with the Bucks. They have two big men, okay? They have Karl Anthony Towns, who can shoot it from outside but can also score from inside. He can get you 25 on a nightly basis. And then Rudy Gobert, who's known for his defense and his rebounding, but he can also get 18, 20 points along with 12, 13, and 14 rebounds. So they present a dual threat with big men, similar to the Milwaukee Bucks. So, but first, you know, naturally the Eastern Conference teams don't have to worry about Minnesota until they clear the field in the Western Conference. Should they go on a run and make the finals, then you worry about them. But they would have to get through that thicket of good Western Conference teams, meaning particularly the Denver Nuggets. They would probably have to beat the Denver Nuggets to reach the finals, you know. So But Minnesota is a legitimate team, I think, and I think they'll be hanging around near the top of the conference all season. They're a good team.
All right. So we'll keep our eye on that. Before I let you go, Mike, we're going to do a little exercise that I did with Steve Krause yesterday. And what it was I just asked him, of, as a fan, your biggest disappointment, and as a fan, your biggest, most pleasant surprise. And I'll lead off to give you time to think about it. My biggest disappointment as a fan is Roger Clemens. And as I told Steve, it all came to a head when he complained about having to carry his own luggage. And I love to watch him pitch. I wanted to root for him so bad. And he went and won seven other Cy Youngs after he left the Red Sox. And then he was accused of doping and stuff like that. And to me, as an adult sports fan, that is my totally biggest disappointment. And the most pleasant surprise that immediately comes to mind was the year the Patriots won that first Super Bowl against the Rams.
Rams, yes.
Yeah, against the Rams. The closing drive is my most pleasant surprise. When the Patriots got the ball, it's a tie game, and John Madden says, well, they're going to, you know, the second-year quarterback, they'll take a knee, they'll play for overtime, and they march right downfield. And I remember saying out loud, Madden, did you do your homework? Have you watched what these guys have done all year long? But they did it, and Brady, you know, it was beautiful, the dink and dunk stuff, and it was such a happy surprise.
Well, I, as an addendum to that, Rick, you might recall, and you would recall this because you followed that game closely, obviously, is that fact that I think Brady came to the sidelines and asked the offensive coordinator, Charlie Weiss, should we kind of just try to go to overtime or should we go for it? And Weiss said something like, heck with this, just sling it.
Just sling
something
it.
Like that. I'm paraphrasing.
I think,
and sure enough, Brady said, okay, let's go. And he did. And they dinked and dunked down the field enough for Vinatieri to kick that field goal. That's what I also remember, the fact that Charlie Weiss and then Brady said, yeah, let's go for it. And Belichick went right along with it.